Hello and welcome to another episode of Video Game Logic. Today's episode was recorded on April the 30th, 2024. I'm your host, gaming psychologist, and with me, as always, telling silly stories.
Caffeine Rage.
On today's show, we will be discussing the April Game Club, Endless Space. We'll be giving you the next Game Club for May. The Embracer Group splits into three. Escape from Tarkov Studio Boss says, quote, he did not foresee, end quote, players would get mad about charging extra money for PvE. Todd Howard says Bethesda is focused on finding ways to increase its output. And for our community corner, Gary's Mod is removing 20 years worth of Nintendo-related items from its Steam Workshop. Timestamps will be in the show notes following their respective topics when I remember to do them. Hello, Rage.
Hello.
How are you?
Not as dead as I expected to be today. Wasn't as bad a day in the chicken pit.
Is this a new record for us, like, talking and starting the recording, like, super late? Is this a new record? I feel like it's close if it's not a new record.
No, we've had way past 11 o'clock before.
Okay, all right. Well, fair enough. I don't expect tonight to be a long recording. Spoilers, you don't have too much to say about Game Club, and I don't know how much I have to say either, which... maybe good or bad, depending on how you feel about these kinds of things. But I'm ready to just dive in. We got
Let's go.
All
let's
right.
Get created by the wall of text.
Woo! So, for those of you who may not know, Game Club is something that Rage and I do with the community. If you choose to participate, where we intentionally play the same game at the same time.
Well, that's being a little generous this time around.
Well, it's happened like this before, though, the other way. Because I've had problems before. I am the problem. Anyways, we play the same game at the same time, and then take this opportunity to talk about it. Discuss our thoughts, feelings, and then move on to another one. So yeah, this month for April, we played Endless Space, which is a 4X space strategy game. Endless Space released, well, let me look here. I believe it was something like 10 years ago. Endless Space. Steam is only showing me Endless Space 2. I want to see the original. Go to I could just go look in the library. What am I doing, Jared?
Definitive Edition.
And it's at the top.
2012.
Okay. Yeah. So, 12 years ago for the Definitive Edition, which is what we played. I don't think you can get the standard anymore. And as far as 4X space strategy games go, it's average, pretty average, with a couple of things that it does that I haven't seen in other 4X space strategy games, at least in the way it handles them. But I've got a lot of experience with 4X space strategy games, and you have none? Next to none?
Not close to none. I mean, I've done the ones that's in Game Club. I played a little bit of Stellaris.
Okay.
But, yeah, not enough to really be able to translate from one to another. And that hit me hard this time because Endless Space does not really communicate very well what it's doing. Its idea of a tutorial is essentially a novel on screen every time you go to a new page or click on a new thing until you run out of new things to click. And there's a lot to absorb in a very short time. And I could not climb that wall.
Yeah.
And the thing is that usually how I learn these games whenever, I hit a tutorial that just is not helping me is I find something on YouTube. And this time around, I just was not able to find a good YouTube tutorial. The guides on Steam are all like partial, for very specific either systems or like win conditions or ship building. But there wasn't one overarching, read this to get started, at least as far as I was able to find. And it was a bit much.
Yeah. I'm looking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. I have, no, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. Steam says I have 29 4X space strategy games. Mm-hmm. Some of these are more like real-time strategy that have gotten lumped in. But collectively, let's say I've got 20 4X space strategy games. So, yeah. And that's just on Steam. So what you're talking about is a definite problem in the game. Poor tooltips, massive like walls of text explaining stuff to you, relatively vague win conditions. But as someone who's played that many games, my strategy was, well, let me just set the difficulty to like very easy. That way I won't be punished for not knowing what I'm doing. Play one game on very easy, figure it all out, and then start like quote unquote a real game. And I was able to do that pretty effectively because of just, you know, my experience within the genre. I didn't read any of the tutorial stuff. I didn't read any of the help stuff. Pure trial and error. And I found that first run a little bit frustrating as I was like figuring stuff out. And then the second one, I lost, but I, you know, knew well enough to know what I was doing that I was the last player, the last empire out. Like it wound up being a conquest game and one of the other empires won, but I was the last surviving one otherwise. So was there anything that you were able to identify that you did like about the game or you found interesting?
Very pretty game. It just, there was too much to really try to focus on.
Yeah.
And even like going into research, I'm looking at the research and thinking, where the hell do I even go with this? Because it starts essentially in the middle of the tech tree and has four branches, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
And it's hard to know what I need because it all has the like the Star Trek techno babble where it's, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
I know. It's another symptom of me not being very versed in this particular genre. So I'm not able to see past the techno babble to see, oh, this is like slightly longer jump range on my ships or, you know.
There's the tech tree is one of the things that I actually really like about this game. Because a lot of strategy games do very sort of distinct technology. Everything is, and not everything, but lots of times you'll see things be very walled garden-esque. And so, you know, kind of the idea of like in some of the Civ games, you can, you know, research all the way up to the internet, but still have, you know, spearmen, bowmen, whatever. Maybe that's a bit of an extreme example, but the endless space tech tree are, there's things on each of the four branches that you need to advance everything. So for example, the tech trees roughly break down into civics, or, you know, sort of civilian stuff, military stuff, planetary improvement, and cultural stuff. But there are things intermixed that help each of the other branches out within them. So, for example, the military technology, it does primarily contain most of the weapons stuff, but some of the technology also has benefits to your planetary infrastructure. Developing better shielding for your ships is something that can give you a bonus to lava planets, for example. Because it's like you can get a population boost because your better shields allow another population unit to exist on those planets, something like that. And there are little things scattered all throughout that make it feel like they're much more interlocked, which feels very realistic. Granted, I know that these games are not specifically supposed to be real, but it's one of those little things of like, okay, well, this is nice. And there are not many, any? To my knowledge, I have never played another one of these games that has that sort of integration. The closest is probably Sword of the Stars, which you're going to hear me mention several times, where that there are, the tech trees are all connected and they have core tech, but there are branching tech that can go into other trees and give you further research in a different tree and it does this sort of randomized tech tree thing. But anyways, Endless Space. Sorry, I had a brain fart about what I was going to talk about. Endless Space does that, which I like in the tech tree. You're right. The game is very good looking, especially for a game that is as old as it is. Spaceships, though, are easier to make look good and to hold up over time. I mean, the old, you know, when I think of like really good looking space games, I do think of Homeworld and Homeworld 2, and not even the remaster that they did, but like the original games or a lot of the old Battletech stuff. Like, it's very angular. You can do a lot and make very angular stuff hold up very well, with just some good lighting, shading, and, you know, some well done artwork. So, I do think that the game looks very good. It's got good particle effects, good, you know, sky boxes or space boxes. Planetary effects are nice. The way that you manage planets is a little different compared to other things. In a lot of 4X space games, every sort of node that you go to is an individual planet. Whereas with this, it is a star system. Space battles still take place in the star systems, but there's a couple of levels in which you can zoom into the star system, and you don't get down to the planet's surface like you do in Galactic Civilization, but you go to a star system, and that system, maybe it has four planets and an asteroid belt. And so you zoom in one level onto that and you see the four planets and the asteroid belt. You can do improvements on each of the planets. You can do improvements that sort of apply to the entire sector. And these things can increase population or science or income, taxable income, things like that. So interacting with the planets, that's a neat touch that I have seen done a couple of times, but I think Endless Space handles it very well. Endless Space has one mechanic that I like that doesn't show up in as many of these games as I wish it would, which is a ship design system. There's a few games that do it. It's not like it's a unique mechanic, but some of these games do not allow you to design your own units, and Endless Space does allow you to do so. As you research things through the tech tree, you unlock new weapons, new engines, new modules. You know, not every ship has to be a military ship. There are trading ships. There are colony ships. There are scouting ships. And so you get to design these ships. And a ship has a certain amount of hull space on it, and then a certain amount of power. And if you want more power or more hull space, you have to research more advanced technologies, or there are certain things that you could stick on them. The power is the easiest. If you need more power, you stick more generators on, or some other kind of power collection method. Solar panels, improved reactors, extra like fusion batteries, whatever. They all just show up in a menu. You're not dragging and dropping individual parts like what Galactic Civilizations does. It's more of a sort of drag and drop into the slot. But you can get fairly granular. There are, unfortunately, only minor distinctions to the designs that you make. The biggest one is the size or type of ship. A destroyer looks different from a corvette, looks different from a carrier, both in terms of their size and some basic visual design. But your faction has a theme, and so all of the ships conform pretty tightly to the theme. I played the Empire, which is sort of a traditional human space empire, and they have very boxy-looking ships, like big rectangles. And in space, you don't have aerodynamics, so you don't have to have...
At least with that attitude.
Right. You don't have to have aerodynamic shapes, but, you know, everything is just a big shiny rectangle for them. And it's a design aesthetic, and it works. I'm not saying it looks ugly, but there's not a lot of variation to those ships. Different factions have different designs, but in general, you can look at it and be like, oh, yes, this is that faction. This is, you know, they've got two carriers and a destroyer. Yes, I can see that visually represented by their size. But because the way the battle systems work is unique to this system, rather than you individually controlling your units or just sort of building up stat blocks to smush the stat blocks against each other, part of the technology that you research allows you to control fleet size, and you can have a certain number of fleet points, and a destroyer only takes up one fleet point, battleships take up three, carriers take up four, dreadnoughts take up five, cruisers take up two, I believe. But so anyways, it's like you can sort of mix and match what you want to go into these fleet slots for your fleet. And then each battle is divided up into three phases, and you unlock different strategies to attack or defend that add a bonus, or sometimes they're just flat bonuses. Sometimes you get a big bonus, but there's also a negative. And then they fall into a type. So, like, there's one type that's sabotage, for example, and that's more about hurting the enemy ships as opposed to helping yours perform well in battle. But sabotage can be countered by engineering, for example. So if they play an engineering strategy and you do a sabotage strategy, then the engineering strategy, theirs will work and yours won't. So you get three phases where you pick these different strategies and your ships close distance. So there's like a long range, a medium range, and a close range fight. And different weapons are better for different ranges. Some weapons can't be used at all in certain ranges. And so you want to try to build your ship and your fleet around whatever like your core strategy is to maximize your strengths and minimize your weaknesses, which is a little bit vague, but different factions have different strengths or weaknesses based on their ship type, the technologies that they have access to. So the Human Empire fleet is very much like a brawler fleet. You want to focus all of your damage on close range. So you want a lot of shields and armor to weather the fire on the way in, and then you just smash your opponents on that final phase when you're in close range. And then a unique feature to the game that I haven't seen anywhere else, it might exist elsewhere, but this is the only place I've seen it, is the hero system. You can recruit heroes. Initially, you can recruit up to three. There are technologies that allow you to expand the amount of heroes that you can recruit, and certain factions get access to more heroes anyways, be that an upper limit, or just more heroes that you can choose to recruit from. And heroes fulfill one of three roles: administrator, fleet admiral, or general. And I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Administrators, you assign to star systems. They boost things on planets, research, income, or production. They have some other bonuses they might provide as well, such as increased population growth. And you can move heroes around freely. There's no penalty to move them around. So it, depending on what your strategy is, you might want to be moving your administrator to new planets or to larger systems in order to help them output a bunch of ships faster, or big research hubs or something like that. Like, depending on your strategy, you can move them around. Fleet admirals get assigned to your fleets and provide bonuses to the fleets, damage increases, defense increases. They gain experience at a faster rate because your ships can gain ranks from combat, and so they just get sort of flat bonuses if they're a higher rank. And then some of them have special maneuvers that they can learn that can be used in combat. And then generals are for planet attack, which the planet bombardment and attack system is the biggest problem I have with this game. Obviously, if you're going to go down the war route, you're going to want to claim territory. And while you can blockade planets to your heart's content and make them economically unviable for your opponent, they still don't count towards a win condition. You have to control the planet for it to go into the conquest victory. So to do that, you have to assault star systems and capture them planet by planet, asteroid base by asteroid base. What would make sense, because you can make planetary bombardment ships. You can do that with various ship types and equipment. You can go doomsday weapon, sort of siege engine, and just smash asteroids or blast giant lasers into their planets, a la Death Star, until they're just smoldering wreckage with no people and no infrastructure and are permanently destroyed, uninhabitable. You can go something a little more tactical using smaller weapons, bombardment, using planetary assault ships. Or you can go, of course, the classic route of landing your space marines to fight house by house, continent by continent, to capture every single planet. However, the game does not allow you to do anything unless you have a troop transport in your fleet. So you cannot bombard, like, you can choose to not land troops, but if there are no troops in your fleet, you can't even bombard the planet. Which makes no sense to me. I even read the tutorial on that one. I lied when I said I didn't read any of the tutorials earlier. I looked that one up. And unless there's something I'm missing, which is possible, I didn't look up any guides on YouTube or anything like that, you just can't. The game expects you to want to capture planets. Like, if you're going to blockade a system to cut it off, fine. But the game doesn't expect you to want to bombard a planet and then leave it. Which could be, like, a very viable strategy if your goal was to not win a military conquest victory. Because if you destroy a planet, it creates shitloads of unhappiness for the faction that has it, and it costs them resources to rebuild infrastructure and put new population on the planet. So it could be a viable strategy to win an economic victory, to every once in a while just completely wipe out a star system for your opponent and then leave them to rebuild it. But the game doesn't allow you to do that. That's what the biggest gripe I have with the game. It's possible I missed something, but I kept finding myself, as I was playing this game, going, you know, I wish I was playing Sword of the Stars right now. Sword of the Stars is probably my favorite 4X strategy game for a variety of reasons. Endless Space is not bad, but it just doesn't scratch the itch in the way that some of the other games that I have played has. I think it sets out to try to do a few new things within the genre, at least for the time frame. The hero system is neat. I hope that newer 4X space strategy games that I haven't played have adopted that system, because it does add a little bit of additional personality to your empire. And I like the way that it handles systems. You get to get a little bit closer, but it doesn't quite get so involved like Galactic Civilizations does, where that you're looking at individual planets with building plots. Not that that's bad, but it can become very time-consuming and to look at every single planet that you have, trying to figure out how to best optimize it. So I feel like it strikes a good balance there. And then as far as the space and sector exploration goes, that's pretty simple, but it works well, it's smooth, and the game responds pretty well to just automating a lot of low-level tasks. But I just didn't feel like it was as good overall as some of my favorites. Especially Sword of the Stars, but there were a couple of others that I got vibes off of, and I was like, you know what, maybe I should just go play that instead. Galactic Civilizations did come to my mind a couple of times, but, you know, I've got 20-something space 4X games. Just occasionally I wanted to be playing a different one. So, do you have anything that you want to add? Like, I know that because of, like, how much you played...
Yeah, I only got really a handful of hours in it, and I never really got past like turn 10, because I just, by that point, I just felt so lost, and it's just, this feels like very much a me problem, you know?
Yeah.
Or me versus the genre, where I haven't really gotten my feet wet in it. I mean, we've tried Space 4X before with, Galactic Civilizations. Oh, no, Sins of a Solar Empire, we tried it, and I had the same problem of I just was unable to really get into it. Even though I played more of that one, I just felt so lost in both of them, you know?
Yeah. Do you... You do have Galactic Civilizations 3.
Uh-oh.
I mean, off the... I think we should do a little research. You said before we were recording that
Googling, and the one that I see popping up a lot is Stellaris, yeah, which I do have. But the problem is that's a Paradox game. So
which Stellaris? There are multiple. I think there are multiple Stellaris games. Stellaris. Maybe I'm thinking of an older game with a similar name. Anyway, I'm sorry. Anyways, carry on.
Hang on.
I see it here on Steam, Stellaris from Paradox.
Yeah. And it has a shitload of DLC.
Yeah. Is it on Game Pass?
A bunch of Paradox. It is the last time I checked. But the problem with playing something that far out with Game Pass is, oh boy, right?
Yeah, who knows if it'll be there or not.
Yeah, we got burned before.
I've never played Stellaris, so we could, if it comes up and we're able to, like, I could go into that one a blind aside from like just, you know, my previous experience, which I can't unlearn. But outside of like people recommending Stellaris, Galactic Civilizations is probably the next one that I would go to. It's fairly straightforward. It has some tutorials. It still suffers from a lot of the like big wall of text problem, but it does have like a tutorial sort of campaign, a tutorial like mission set, which helps. But Sword of the Stars is still my favorite. I think for me, I guess to maybe articulate that a smidgen, I've talked about Sword of the Stars on the podcast, but it's been several years probably. It combines two aspects. The first is that 4X thing where you're, you know, going planet by planet, capturing them, building them up, etc. But it also has a pretty in-depth ship builder and real-time strategy combat. So you get, you know, grand strategy, you know, explore, expand, exploit, exterminate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can build your ships and customize them pretty heavily and then directly control them in combat. So for me, it hits like a nice sort of meeting point of the good aspects of both the 4X and space RTS genres. Speaking of install, I'll be playing a little Sword of the Stars over the next couple of weeks.
How many space 4Xs did you say you had?
According to like one, you know, you can go and you can look at your library. I believe it was 20 something. Hang on. Let me go do one of those advanced filters. Let's do 4X again.
Yeah, for me, 4X is a muddy collection of mine because it's based off the store page.
Yeah, so if I do the, you know, the quick little filter search in my library, if I do 4X and space, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12... 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 27, 28, 29. Okay, so Steam says I have 30. Some of these are not actually 4X games. Like, it put the Homeworld Remastered Collection in there, which is not a 4X. Those are 4X. Pixel Starships, that's not a 4X.
Yeah, for me, there was stuff like... now I'm blanking. I mean, even Civilization is barely 4X. It really depends on where you draw the line, right?
Yeah. Boy, some of these... Oh, I remember Star Drive. Man, now I want to play that too. Last played October 31st, 2013. Hegemony, Solar Heritage. I don't remember this one. The old Space Empires 4 and 5 series. Lords of the Black Sun. Hey, you sent me something. What did you send me? Oh, Stellaris. Hey, thanks. Is that on sale?
That was not, but it's also the 30th.
Oh, hey. Thanks. Except. Aren't you?
The other two were on sale.
Well, shit. Now I gotta install Stellaris too. Did you buy it for yourself?
I had it.
Oh, install.
I have a few of the DLCs. I'm not going that far because if you go down the Paradox route, it's like $300 some of DLC.
So are you saying that we should put Stellaris on the a future game club?
Possibly.
Cool. I'm down. I'm always down to play another 4X. I guess in short, in closing, I would rate Endless Space as like a solid B-. As a 4X space strategy game. It does some neat things. It's certainly not broken. A couple of issues that I have with it, but it's relatively cheap all the time because of its age. I didn't have any issues with performance or any oddities because it's getting up to the point where that like it's old enough that I could see it having some problems with modern systems because of weird eccentricities about like hyperthreading not being as common that long ago or like stuff like that, you know, where we have had issues with games in the past from this sort of late 2000s, early 2010s era of games we've played before.
Yeah, so like the PS3, Xbox 360 era where PC games were less focused on.
Yeah.
Although, you know, this is a 4X, so it doesn't really struggle from that. But, you know, you get into more mainstream stuff that was on consoles as well. And the PC was definitely not the focus, the focus target, you know?
Yeah. But, like, right now, it's not on sale, but this game is $10. So, if you're looking for one to play, and you've got some experience, I wouldn't, you know, I would say it's recommendable if you're looking for something new. Pretty solid, not too expensive, but if you've never played a 4X game before, this suffers from a lot of pitfalls of trying to get into, yeah. Yeah, of trying to get into the series.
And the thing is, it's also its age. It, even though, you know, can pretty much run on a toaster these days, makes it so that it's old enough where there's not a lot of YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
So you're mostly referring to written guides, which, at least for me, it's harder to follow along with whatever you're looking at one thing, then flipping back and forth, where if I was doing a YouTube guide, you know, it could be kind of like a play along.
Yeah. One other eccentricity is that it does, like, I'm looking at the store page and I had forgot about this. It has Steam Cloud support. Like, it says it does, and it does, but it's not on by default. When you go to save your game for a quote-unquote campaign or whatever you want to call it, there's a little tick box that you have to tick on for it to use Steam Cloud. I'm not sure why. Only thing I can think of is that, like, Steam Cloud storage used to be a lot smaller, and so maybe they were worried about size requirements, and because of the age, they've just never changed it. But it does work. You just have to manually enable it on a per game basis or a per campaign basis, whatever you want to call it. So that's just something to be aware of if you're going to play this and you want to play it across multiple machines, which I did. I played at work sometimes when I had some downtime, and then at home. And the first time I went to go play at work, I'm like, where's my save? And then I realized, oh, you've got to turn it on manually. So yeah, Endless Space Definitive Edition. B- from me.
I don't think I could fairly grade it because I didn't get far enough.
DNF. Did not finish. So yeah, our next game club for May. We're doing one that is fairly short. I've got a pretty busy month. Not sure I'm going to have a lot of time to put into a game for May, despite the fact that May is typically a longer month. We are going to be playing a game on Game Pass called Open Roads. Open Roads is a, let me pull this up here. What genre is it classified as?
Oh boy, right.
It's sort of an open world. That's a lie. It's like a puzzly sort of slow paced
interactive fiction.
Interactive fiction. Yeah. It says one fine fall day, Tess Devon Divine and her mother discover a cache of old notes and letters carefully stashed away. Hints of deep-rooted family secrets, decades-old burglaries, and a lost treasure somewhere near the Canadian border. And then they go on a road trip to explore that.
Yeah, although it's not quite the same genre, I would put this more almost like visual novel.
Yeah.
The idea of a very story-focused with probably some light puzzle. If there's any quote-unquote gameplay, you know?
Yeah. So, how long to beat says that this game takes 2 to 3 hours to complete. So, it could be done in one slightly extended play session, most likely. I'll probably wind up breaking it up into two. But, like, you know, on my calendar for this weekend, I've got stuff. Which, you know, this weekend is the first weekend in May, so... Kids got a Taekwondo tournament in May. Got some house guests coming the next week for the 11th.
Yeah, you have a new Star Wars game to tackle.
I do have a new Star Wars game to tackle. I should be able to play on the 18th, like kind of that weekend. And like weekend gaming is where I tend to do most of my game club gaming just because, you know, work and everything coming home. Plus, I'm more likely to do stuff during the week. So it's like the 18th and the 25th are the only two weekends that I think I've got a shot at being able to like have enough time to play through the game. So slightly longer month, but I'm very busy this month, so we went with something a little bit shorter. Open Roads.
Well, it also works out that it's just because of April. May is just a 4-week month anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
A typical month. Our next long month is July, and gee, I wonder what we're putting there.
Wink, wink, hint, hint, not judge.
Roll dice.
Roll some dice, yeah. Roll for investigation on that one, please. Maybe insight.
Should we just say our next three so that we could possibly get some interaction?
Yeah, why not? So
Open Roads, June is a new Souls-like, and the first time that we've really tackled Souls-like, as far as I can recall.
Yeah, ever for Game Club. We've played a few here or there and talked about them, but never for Game Club. It is another Crab's Treasure.
A nautical-themed Souls-like, or I should say under-the-sea Souls-like. I've played a little bit of it so far, and it's impressed me. And that scared me a few times because, you know, I don't have the muscle memory for Souls-like.
Yeah.
And then, of course, July, we hinted at it. It's a long month. Hello Kitty World Adventure.
Of course. Yeah, what did you think we were going to say? Baldur's Gate 3? Yeah. No, we are in fact going to be playing Baldur's Gate 3 for July. I know at least a couple of people in the listenership play this game.
You better chime in, fuckers.
You and I have both been playing. I have completed a single playthrough and am halfway through the game on a couple of other playthroughs.
I would say I'm about a third of the way through on my first playthrough.
Yeah,
I need to really set up modding on the Steam Deck, but I am being a filthy cheater. I'm playing a mod. I'm playing with two: one, achievement enabler, and two, party size increase.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't used party size increase. I've used a couple more mods, but I want to get through a tactician run before I. And give the game some more time for there to be no more updates for some of the major mods. Because I do want to put some of the big mods on it that bring in up to level 20, all the missing spells, the other class, because Baldur's Gate 3 is missing Artificer, and then additional races and stuff. But every time the game gets an update, which it's still getting them, a lot of the mods wind up broken. Mm-hmm. So I've been keeping my mods pretty light. Mostly dice, and then my original playthrough, I used a mod which removed the romance thing so that I could fuck everything in my first playthrough. And we'll get to that. when July rolls around, we'll get to that. But yeah, those are our next 3 months. Open Roads in May, another Crab's Treasure in June, which I said in the... when we were talking, did it wind up in a recording somewhere? Did I type it in chat? I don't know. At some point, I said we got a couple of surprises, and Another Crab's Treasure is one of them, because the Souls-like is completely new for us. And then Baldur's Gate 3. The other surprise is in September, but we'll hold on to that surprise for a little longer.
Yeah, I say we keep doing 2 or 3 months out, especially for longer games.
Sure. I'm okay with doing that.
And we have a couple curveballs coming up. Yeah. On the Tuesday, you got really excited for my list, and I was very mild for yours.
Hey, that's the way it goes sometimes, though. So, but yeah. Alrighty. Let me get it back over here to the topics list. So, moving on to our first news story of the night. The Embracer Group splits into three.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean... this is a semi-positive sign. I mean, let's be honest. Having Embracer around has been nothing but trouble for the gaming industry. But having them trying to restructure so that they're not shutting down more game studios and laying off more and more people is slightly better. I mean, don't get me wrong. It still sucks. That so many companies are just captured by this group, but, you know?
Yeah.
So, the three companies created will independently be publicly listed on the Nasdaq Stockholm These companies are currently being referenced to as Amsterdam, Coffee Stain, and Friends.
And Middle Earth, notice the and Friends.
And Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, although the latter two will be given a new name at a later date.
And Friends. Beautiful. Yeah, so this is saying Asmodee will split off during the next 12 months, while Coffee Stain will separate during calendar year 2025, and that shares will be distributed to shareholders of Embracer.
Oh, come on, Coffee Stain, survive long enough to get 1.0 out.
I hope so. The quote is, they claim that separating into three entities will enable each to focus on their core strategies and go in their own ways. The 900 fully owned or controlled IPs across Embracer will be moved into a relevant new entity. But the truth is, like, why they're doing this is because
they fucked up.
They way overspent buying up all these IPs that they believed were going to be profitable, like stupidly profitable, and then they got burned.
They got burned by that big Saudi deal. That never materialized.
Yeah. They got burned for a variety of factors because these purchases started like pre or in the midst of COVID. And there were huge losses in multiple industries, obviously. The COVID, I've heard it referred to as a bunch of different stuff, but like the COVID blip is my kind of favorite way to think about how it's referred to on these types of like issues with industries and whatever, but like the COVID blip like cost them a shitload of money. Then and that was also one of the reasons why the Saudi deal fell through. But there were other reasons. I'm sure there's stuff we'll never learn about that multi-billion-dollar deal that fell through.
Yeah, and they also, in my opinion, they massively overspent for some of these companies.
And they did massively overspend for some of these companies. Absolutely. And they've hit this point where that they need to cut their losses. And so splitting them off into these different companies will allow them to cut the losses. Can represent them on their, you know, on their balance sheets, on their tax documentations and all of that jazz. And I don't fully understand every aspect of spinning off like shell corporations, or even if they're not shell corporations, spinning off like multiple corporate entities.
Well, but it also would allow the companies that they feel could recoup the debt easier, basically their AAA branch, to take on the lion's share of the debt as well.
Yeah. But it's a lot of accounting tricks and mumbo jumbo to move and hide debt as well as extend things out longer. So they're cutting their losses. They're making moves. They're running from a lot of these problems that they have made for themselves.
They're sweeping them under the rug for somebody else to find, essentially.
Yep. And, you know, for them, I suppose it is probably the smartest business move, given the position that they're in. But there's going to be a knock-on effect that we won't be able to predict, other than it's going to probably be bad in terms of, like, lost studios, lost jobs, It won't be good. I have no hopes that this is going to turn out well for anybody involved except for Embracer Group.
Particularly the suits.
Yeah. So, you know, I wish everyone involved, all of the quote-unquote boots on the ground people, the people who are in there like doing the real work, like I wish them all the best. You know, good luck on their projects. I hope they're able to recover, even if that means that, you know, they have to leave and go do something different. But the article breaks down things a little bit farther based on what they know about the Asmodee Group, Coffee Stain and Friends, and then Middle Earth Enterprise and Friends. But unless you really want to get off into the details, that's available for folks to go read if they want to know more.
But it also really says what they feel about Coffee Stain, right?
Yeah.
Embracer's just been such a frustrating thing to have to cover over and over again.
Yeah, for years now.
And the fact that, especially this year, there's been so many layoffs directly tied to Embracer. Aren't we in one of the worst layoff years in video game history?
Yeah, and we're still within... No, actually, we're in quarter two. But still, we're within the first half of the year. But yeah, this has been one of the worst layoff years in gaming history.
Now I gotta go check. Let's see.
It might be the worst, as far as I know.
No, according to this, 2023 was the worst.
Okay.
Mind you, okay, 2023, based on Statistica, which is behind a paywall, but Google gives me the last couple years' worth. 2023, 11,250. 2024 year to date is 5,700. That's troubling.
Yeah, we're on pace to match or potentially beat that. So, yay! Speaking of layoffs, well, no, damn it, that would be a good segue to bitch about Bethesda doing something. Oh well, who knows? Maybe this is speaking of layoffs too. Tarkov. Oh,
well, I bet the CEO would wish the fans would just lay off,
right? Ah. Escape from Tarkov studio boss says he did not foresee players would get mad about charging extra for PvE.
Okay, I'm going to admit, I don't know a ton about Escape from Tarkov. I've watched some streams of it. And I know it's a PvP / PvE shooter where you go collect loot, and try to escape, and then, you know, try to build essentially your hoard of loot.
Escape from Tarkov is a very realistic, like, it adds very realistic elements to the scenario. Like, if you get shot, then your character suffers lasting damage. You can die and respawn, but you do take, like, ongoing penalties for that until you're able to heal, like spend real world time, like getting medical care and healing. And there might be different game modes. Like, Tarkov is a game that I have liked from afar, but have not been interested in because the PvP element, the PvE stuff, I think brand new. There might have been some PvE with bots before, but.
Well, the way I always heard it was described was PvP, PvE, where there were the bots that were on the map in addition to players, and you could kill the bots for loot, and you could kill the players for loot in addition to what's on the map. Mind you, I haven't seen a Tarkov stream in ages, so my knowledge, as limited as this, is also very outdated. So, there is that. But the idea is PvPE is just, yeah, there is that PvE element already. But I wasn't sure what the PvE DLC is supposed to be. But the thing is that they're locking it behind a $250 edition of the game. And that the fact that that even exists as just a digital thing, it's just mind-blowing to me, you know?
Yeah.
Whenever I think of, you know, $100, $200, $300 editions, well, I guess I should say 100 these days with how AAA process is going, but I'm thinking, you know, physical swag, you know? Like the collector's editions that, you know, come with, you know, statuettes, stones, toys, that sort of thing. Not PvE content unlocked.
Yeah, as well as a few other things, like reading this article, looks like you get some stuff that makes you less likely to be attacked by the AI. You get...
So it's not only PvE, it's also pay to win.
It's buying power, yeah. And it looks like, also reading this article, another version of the game that already existed, the Edge of Darkness edition, also had some items in it that essentially were buying power. But yes, new pockets, which gives you additional item storage and allows you to pick up more stuff every run, meaning that you more quickly can build your loot stash.
Mm-hmm.
And then an item that you can carry that makes the AI less likely to attack you. What else is in here?
Which, boy, does all this sound exciting, that makes me want to play, you know?
Yeah. You have additional ammo slots on your tactical vest,
which is more buying power. So your buying power, and buying power. Some of this might be losable, like, you know, the fact that you're carrying an item. But slots makes it sound like it's a permanent upgrade.
Oh, fuck. And you get an item which is called Mark of the Unheard, which is an item that cannot be looted from players. It is a special radio. If you have it, you find your insured gear comes back faster. In-game cash services cost less. Because there are, like, people you can, or AI you can find that buy and sell things and can provide services to you, like healing, cost less, and players with over a 6.0 fence rep will find that scabs over 60 meters away no longer shoot at them unless provoked.
Wow. That's absurd.
Yep.
I mean, even discounting the whole PvE thing, the amount of power that is being sold in this edition... It's well farming, you know? It's well hunting. I thought, well, outside of Japan, it's, you know, frowned upon, you know?
Yeah. But
you're welcome.
So that's why people are so upset about it. It's not even, I mean, locking the full PvE mode behind the addition is frustrating for people. But what people are the most mad about is all of the direct power that you gain via purchasing this upgrade or buying into the game at this level for the first time. So
I'm just mind blown with just how much is in this. Mind you, it's not a good value because it's ridiculous that there's a $250 edition that is all just power creep, you know, or I should say just buying power over and over, doubling down. Some of it sounding like permanent upgrades that you can't even lose.
Yeah. And like, I'm definitely not going to buy this. Mm. I have been interested in Tarkov. I think it's an interesting, sort of fascinating game that I would like to play, but I don't want to play against humans. Like, that sounds awful to me. Because of, you know, loot goblining behavior and, you know, just sort of the toxic place that online communities for games, for battle royale games become. Battle Royale are like MOBA in that way.
Well, Battle Royale is exactly the proper term for this. But more like Deathmatch.
Yeah.
But same idea.
But, you know, I don't want to have to deal with that. So the idea of a PvE mode is intriguing to me, whether it's a completely separate thing with like a campaign or some kind of persistent something, or it's just, here's the game, but you can play it fully PvE. You know, go wild. Like, that's intriguing to me. But I'm not going to pay $250 for it. You know? No, thank you. I have other games I could play.
Like Stellaris.
Or even in this, you know, in a similar genre, like Ravenfield, which I talked to you about. I don't think I've talked about it on the show yet, but, you know, Ravenfield offers a very customizable, highly moddable, single-player PvE, you know, shooter experience that is a lot of fun that I've played, you know, a decent amount of so far. But that's for another episode on the show. Speaking of things that are a waste of money, Todd Howard says Bethesda is focused on finding ways to increase its output. They're taking the wrong lessons from things. Although I said this before the recording. Let's summarize this. Todd Howard says Bethesda wants to make more shit faster. That's what the whole article boils down to. They haven't ruled out.
But yeah, focusing on like spin-off companies or letting others work on their IPs, which they did work really well for Fallout New Vegas.
Yep.
But we're also looking more at like mobile spin-offs, which... Ugh.
Fallout Shelter is fine. And if they did a couple of things that were more along those lines, as opposed to Elder Scrolls Blades.
Yeah, but let's be honest. What's more likely in the current landscape of things?
They make a gacha game? No, they make an auto sort of clicker idler game that you just watch and feed money into.
Yo, it wouldn't surprise me.
They make a Raid Shadow Legends for Fallout.
Yeah, for all the ads I've seen of Raid Shadow Legends, I've never really even looked at the gameplay.
I have. What gameplay?
So it's basically an Adler RPG.
Yep. I got curious, so I looked into it, you know. Like, it shows up on YouTube channels all the time. And so I, you know, a YouTuber I watched, I used their code or whatever and downloaded the game and got the bonus hero and the gold or whatever. And it's like, you pick a team, you every once in a while tell them to do something, and then you just like send them on adventures and you watch them fight and you press the fast forward button.
Which is probably really compelling for somebody that doesn't have time to properly game. You know, from fire it up, tell your adventures to go do something. And shut it down, right?
Yep. But anyways, like, it looks flashy. There are breasts that are pretty well exposed for your pleasure. And the sound is good. Good sound design, good music. Like, the people who did that, like, they put a lot of work in. Good for them. You know, they did good. But it's not really a game. And like, I don't mean that in like a gatekeeper-y, like, oh, it's not a game. It's like, no, this is, they're trying to minimize the amount of gameplay possible in order to maximize the amount of time that you will pay to speed things up. Like, that kind of thing.
I'm trying to remember where I heard it before. I'm wanting to say it was the Windbreakers podcast, where they had a developer that...
Oh, the Monopoly Go guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, who put some, like, gameplay mechanics into the game. And like a mini game or something, and they got complaints, or I don't remember the whole story, but like they had to stop because it was costing time, and ultimately it was leading to people spending less money, even though they were engaging with the game more.
Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why I just don't do mobile games that much anymore.
Yep. I love how that we read the article and then immediately fucked off to talk about something else because we don't care. I mean, Bethesda.
Bethesda's learned the wrong lessons.
Yeah.
Starfield for any other company would have been a wake-up call. We spent this long on this, and it feels like they rushed their homework. They front-loaded the game with a few cool moments, and then it's even by Bethesda standards watered down. We're at going on to a year before the first big DLC expansion, which is pretty telling about how much that they had to work on this game in the back end, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the lesson, there's two possibilities, and they could be both of them at the same time. There's that. They learned the wrong lessons. And the lesson that they seem to be taking is, well, we should just do more faster. Instead of, we should pay back our games, we should focus on the core gameplay mechanics that people are most interested in. Maybe do a parallel project where we do one big game and one small game at the same time, or something along those lines. But instead they're like, push more shit out faster. That's what people want, is more shit. The other thing, though, that I said, and I can't remember if we were already recording Franken or not for that, but was that Microsoft, Big Daddy Microsoft, shelled out billions of dollars for Bethesda.
And bent over backwards for the government as well.
Yep. And Starfield did not deliver like Bethesda expected it to or wanted it to.
Or promised.
Yep. And now Microsoft is going, listen, you owe us, you know, a few billion dollars before we're square on this deal. Like, we got to make some money off of you. So better fucking shovel some of that stuff out that you got in your backlog.
Yeah, this article... I was already apprehensive about the next Elder Scrolls game. This makes me very concerned it's just going to be shovelware at this point.
Yeah.
Because, remember, they did a teaser, what, like 3-4 years ago? The teaser was... Or was it like 5 or 6 years ago?
I think it was 2019 was when the Elder Scrolls 6 teaser... played
mind
at E3.
The teaser, which, E3 doesn't even exist anymore. But,
2018, according to the Google. 6 years, baby.
Oh, God. COVID really warped time, huh?
Yeah, it did.
But they teased saying, after Starfield, it's going to be this. And, Starfield's been out. Well, it's going to be out a year before the first DLC. There's no hint of the modding tools outside of, we're working on it, it'll be out soon, which has always been, you know, like the saving grace of Bethesda products anyway. It makes me really worried that they're trying to just amp up production, or, you know, get the production time going and move on from Starfield and the broken state that it is in. Hope that the modders fix it, which we had an article like a month after Starfield came out that a major mod group just said, yeah, this game's shit, we're not even doing this.
Yeah.
And wanting to just move on to Elder Scrolls, hoping that that, you know, that they haven't burnt that bridge yet. It also makes me wonder what they're going to do with Fallout.
Well,
Fallout,
I mean,
Fallout has a renaissance going on with the show.
Because of the show, yeah. Which I still would like to watch, but I haven't had a chance to yet.
So are we going to see them basically shit out Elder Scrolls 6 just to get to Fallout, hoping to chase that trend? Mind you, we're talking AAA gaming. So, you know, moving quickly for a AAA studio, you're looking at, you know, 3-4 years.
Yeah. Who knows? And honestly, I don't care. I don't care anymore. Like, I don't know how much of this is just like my own cynicism growing as I get older.
You're welcome.
I don't think this is direct. I don't think this is directly related to Bethesda. I feel this way about a lot of stuff. I want games to be good. I want the games that they make to be good, but I don't believe that they can do it, and I don't care enough to, like, invest in it. There are too many other games that exist that are good, that I do enjoy playing, that I would like to spend more time with, and I'm not going to worry about Bethesda Studios anymore. I'm not going to worry about fucking Microsoft anymore, other than I have to, you know, other than what I have to. I'm not gonna worry about Blizzard. I'm not gonna worry about Activision. Like, obviously, we're still gonna talk about them on the show. We're still gonna talk about, like, stuff that happens. But it's just, like, I don't have any more hopes or expectations that anything that they make will be good, other than the fact that just, like, I want games to be good. And that's that's extremely freeing to be like, I don't fucking care. I want them to do a good job, but, you know, if they don't, I've got Baldur's Gate. I've got Dyson Sphere. I've got Factorio. I've got the old KSP. I've got Battletech. I could go on, you know, with these games that I do enjoy playing. To me, that's more important. And I hope you feel the same. Both you, my dear friend, and you, the dear listener.
Yeah, because I was pretty sour on Bethesda back in playing Skyrim.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was surprised at the very beginning of Starfield, and it just, you know, falls off a cliff. It could have been, you know, just I had, you know, like the couple good moments and hit the big story, couple good story missions that got me slightly excited, and then that was it.
Yeah.
You see that star system? You can fast travel to it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I would go back and play Starfield again at some point. I would. It would be, like, at the right space and time, it would be the right distraction for my brain. But I'm not compelled to go back and play it because it was good or interesting. I don't have an itch to play it because, you know, I want to try something new or different. Like, I took a break from Baldur's Gate 3 and have started a new playthrough recently. Other than, like, you know, I've got a multiplayer playthrough going with a couple of people from my D&D group that we just kind of play whenever we wind up canceling D&D. But, you know, of my own devices, I took a little break, and now I'm going back to play again and exploring some different aspects of the game, deliberately making some different choices, playing a different type of character, because I want to see what I could do differently and how it can affect the outcome of the game. And that's not something that I would go back to Starfield for. I would go back to Starfield for, it's like, I need a podcast game right now that I haven't played in a little while, so I can get some novel stimulation while I'm listening to a podcast. That would be what would convince me to play Starfield again.
I mean, and pretty much the only thing that will get me going back to Starfield is the mod creation tools coming out and actually having some interesting things done with the game systems, because Bethesda sure as fuck didn't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's how many just systems that are there, but are just never really used?
Yeah, several. Many.
Supposedly, they're redoing the shipbuilding, or taking a revamp to the shipbuilding systems. So maybe they'll make it where, you know, it is more interesting. I mean, unless you really wanted to build a very creative or decorative ship, it didn't matter what you did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't really foresee myself going to Starfield for a very long time. And part of that might just be because, you know, I have the Game Pass version, so, you know, the script extender would be, you know, unavailable to me anyway, which most of the more interesting mods would most likely require. I haven't even looked at Starfield's modding scene these days.
Neither have I. Again, I don't care. I don't care. If I ever did decide to, like, scratch that itch for a podcast game, you know, I'd look into it then. But for now, I don't care. So.
It is pretty low on the download count. I just went to Nexus Mods.
Yeah.
It is number 19 on the download count. Yeah, whenever you go to the master, you know, game page.
Yeah.
Between Dragon Age Inquisition and modding tools. Morrowind's ahead of it.
Morrowind's a better game, so yeah.
Dragon Age Origins.
Dragon Age Origins is a better game, so of course it is.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Baldur's Gate 3 is a much better game, yeah.
It is actually the lowest on any of Bethesda's things that I could see off the top of my head. Skyrim, and Fallout 4, and Fallout New Vegas are the top four.
Skyrim, Fallout 4, and Fallout New Vegas are all better games than Starfield.
Skyrim is debatable. Then Stardew Valley.
Yeah, much better game, of course.
I gotta see what, like, some of the top mods are. Let's see. Most popular all time. Star UI! Because, of course, right?
Yeah, but those are always the top mods for all of those games, I think. Maybe not Morrowind, because Morrowind actually has, like, a godly PC UI from the start.
Undelayed menus, better HUD, removing a lot of the graphical issues, or speeding up the menus. So it reduces all the animations that are unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much what you expect from a Bethesda game, minus all the content mods, because, you know, right?
Yeah.
Looks like most of it's just, you know, like swaps, you know. Music, UI. I guess nobody's figured out how to import stuff otherwise, or anything bigger, because why would you need to mod creation tools on a for a game company that made its, you know, bread and butter with moddable games, right?
Good question. Can't answer it. So, anyways, yeah. Are you ready to move on?
I think so.
All righty. So, our final topic of the night comes to us in the community corner. Which was, we expanded upon this a smidgen, but it was posted by Jim about Garry's Mod. Garry's Mod is removing 20 years worth of Nintendo-related items from its Steam Workshop.
Do we need to go over what Garry's Mod is?
I don't know. I don't... Maybe, like, super briefly, just in case?
Garry's Mod is basically a mod... Or, not even a mod these days. It's a game that's a sandbox for Valve's, and I'm blanking on the engine Half-Life uses, or Half-Life 2.
Oh, I don't know what engine that is. Like, I don't know the name of the engine.
Source Engine. Duh.
Okay.
Source. It's basically a sandbox game using the Source Engine where you can build shit, or you could do animations. Some of the early YouTube stuff that you saw using Valve characters was Garry's Mod, where they would pose the characters and like put invisible thrusters where they'd spin around or flail their arms, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's used in Machinima. There's game modes that's attached to it as well. And it has a massive workshop of just pretty much everything that you could imagine. Well, I guess now minus Nintendo stuff. Where you could import it. There's maps. There's full-on game modes. There's roleplay stuff. There's some game types could arguably be even traced to Garry's Mod. Like, Prop Hunt was a very popular game mode for a long time.
Yeah, where, I mean, Prop Hunt is still popular. It's evolved, but it's still a very popular game mode, or game mode, game. People, stream it on Twitch, YouTube, all kinds of places.
Yeah, which there's been games that pop up that try to use, do Prop Hunt as its own standalone game, but it's always just been, a thing in Garry's Mod as well.
Yeah.
And it's all physics-based as well, so, there's videos of Rube Goldberg machines and just crazy shit. So Nintendo issued a cease and desist to Facepunch, which is the developer behind Garry's Mod, and Garry Newell himself, saying, take down all the Nintendo stuff. Because, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, it really stinks to lose that much content. But Nintendo is also, kind of being assholes here.
Yeah. Nintendo doing Nintendo things.
Yeah. It's amazing just how much Nintendo's going out of their way to be utter assholes about things. I mean, don't get me wrong. I also understand, at least to some degree, you have to protect your copyright or your intellectual property. Otherwise, you're in that possibility of losing it. But this is going after edge cases. This feels like, somebody saw one thing and went down a rabbit hole and brought it to an attorney's attention.
Yeah. And, that probably is the case.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just going through the Garry's Mod workshop, and there's all sorts of weird shit. It's been ages since I fired up Garry's Mod, so. But there's a Shrek Zooka. It's a bazooka that fires Shrek missiles.
Yep. That checks out.
Yeah, and when you get hit by one, it's all ogre.
Hey.
Different cars, licensed cars, Ford Mustang, Chevy Suburban, Mercedes-Benz C63 AM. Okay. AMG Black, sorry, it cut off the name. Lots of Lego stuff, Lego maps, Lego props, stuff that you could click together with Lego, or like Lego,
Yeah.
I mean, where does it end if you start going after Garry's Mod stuff? Because, I mean, hell, Disney would have a field day. Right here is Iron Man and Darth Vader, right?
Yeah.
And here's player models for Eevee and the different Eevee illusions from Pokemon. So, uh-oh, right?
Uh-oh.
Although, does that fall under the Nintendo thing? I know Pokemon is its own company. It's technically not Nintendo. Yeah. I mean, this is just Nintendo being assholes. But honestly, it doesn't surprise me at this point.
No, it doesn't surprise me either. I mean, they've done so much shit. So much shit. So
it surprises me that they have as much goodwill in the gaming space as they do.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I do have Nintendo stuff as well. But also, I'm not trying to defend them. I'm not, I don't view myself as a Nintendo fanboy. I don't feel myself invested in Nintendo. I do like some of their games. I like some of their series. But damn it, that makes it hard to want to go into them at times, huh?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I've been engaging with more Nintendo stuff recently because of, you know, I got a Switch and I've been playing various things and at least thinking about them a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, Nintendo. Nintendo's gonna Nintendo.
Well, there's always the used market.
Yeah, that's true. And I will be getting a lot of games from the used market. You know, I've got a local game shop that is pretty small, you know, small local one. There's McKay's, which I've talked about before, the much larger shop that deals with shitloads of used books, movies, games, etc. So we'll get there. But anyways.
So speaking of getting there?
Yeah. Speaking of getting there, hey Rage, how can people contact us and, you know, do the things?
Well, you can contact the show by emailing vglpodcast@gmail.com. And you can tweet us, vglpodcast, on the Twitter. Or you drop by the Discord, which you can find a link to that over at vglpodcast.podbean.com.
Indeed. Hey, Rach, why don't you hit them with your socials?
Oh, I'm antisocial.
Fair enough. carry on, sir.
I mean, you could contact me, Gaming with CR, or be my friend on Steam, but why would you?
Because we love you. I love you.
Bad touch. You're not fooling me into the back of a U-Haul.
Again.
Now, I'm not falling for that twice.
Well, they do say the third time's the charm, so I suppose I'll try again later. But yes, I guess my socials, if you want to find my socials, over on Twitter or Blue Sky, JMA4707 on either. You can be friends with me on Steam, JArthur4707, or you can come to our Discord and say hi to me if you want to. I'll say hi back, probably. I do my best. But yeah, I think that does it. So you wanna take us home?
I'm not falling for that one again either, but I will end up the podcast.
All right. How about that?
VGLpodcast@gmail.com with your letters, voicemails, game-related topics. Tweet us VGLpodcast or drop by the Discord, which you can find a link to that over at VGLpodcast.podbean.com right there at the top. And if you wish to spread the love, you can find us on your podcatcher of choice. Our lovely, lovely patrons have made this band as possible. You can find out more about that over at patreon.com/VGLpodcast. Our intro and outro music is On the Ground by Kim McLeod. You can find his work over at incompetech.com. And
as always, as his lovely music starts to roll across my voice, bye-bye now.
See ya.
Bye-bye.